Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Jerry Ripperger is here, too. Jerry is VP of Consulting at the Principal Financial Group. He's one of the people we turn to when we want to find out what's going on out there in the world of benefits and helping companies with their move forward with their succession planning. That's one of the things we're going to talk about today. And Jerry's been a member of our Brain Trust now for over 13 years. He's our good friend Jerry. Welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and your audience.
It's good to have you back, as always, Jerry. So I was telling the audience before we got here that we're in a period of time right now where we have millions of small businesses founded and owned by baby boomers. And many of them are now in the fourth quarter of their career. And, you know, even though I've got this thing about retirement, I don't plan to retire. I probably will slow down at some point in time. And if I owned a traditional business, which I don't, like a regular Main Street storefront, then I'd be having to think about succession planning. But you're telling us, you were telling my group here, that there's not nearly enough of that going on right now in the baby boomer generation. What do you think?
Yeah, and you have brought up multiple good points there, Jim. We're kind of at a unique spot in the history of the United States. Every 57 seconds, a business owner is turning age 65.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to continue for the next two decades. And if you look at the amount of just the investment in the company, those pre-retirees have, and we define that as people that are age 55 to 70, it's over $4.5 trillion.
Wow.
So there's this huge amount of wealth locked up in this illiquid asset called private stock.
Right.
You know, you'd made the point, you know, I may not plan on retiring. Well, sometimes somebody else makes that decision.
That's right. We're all going out head first or feet first, one way or the other.
Correct. And the reality is over 70% of these business owners do not have a succession plan in place according to the Exit Planning
mm-hmm.
Institute. Now, in their mind, merely putting in your will that I'm leaving it to Junior 50 is not a succession
plan. That's not a succession plan. No, this is a living, breathing organism. This is a tax-paying entity. Or a tax filing entity. If you've got a business, it's an entity. It's almost a sentient being, and it needs to be treated as such. And it involves a lot of different stakeholders. You got customers who care about the future of your business. You got employees who care about the future, but you got vendors who care. You're important. Your business is important to the economic ecosystem. So there's an obligation here. Well, why do you think it is? You think it's because of denial? You think it's because of ignorance? You think it's what do you think? They think they're going to live forever? What do you think?
I think there's a combination of factors that lead to the 70% not having a succession plan. First of all, it's hard. It's hard. Trying to think about what I'm going to do, that can involve difficult decisions regarding family members, regarding key employees, regarding those other constituencies you talked about, clients, vendors, suppliers, etc. Second, it takes time. And most business owners, they make widgets. They're worried about making a better widget and
right.
selling the next widget, figuring out what version 4 of the widget looks like. Now, what am I going to do with my business 10 years from now, 20 years from now? The reality is the time to write your succession plan, draft 1, because it's a living document, change over time, is when you write your initial business plan.
Right.
You should start the business thinking, how ultimately am I going to extract the value I built out of this business? Or maybe it's transfer the value to a family member, etc. And then I need to review that every year.
Mm-hmm.
I need to dig into that, update that, you know, circumstances warrant change.
Well, there's got to be a funding. There's got to be a funding mechanism for these things, though, right? I mean, that's one of the. I think that's one of the challenges. Even the knowledgeable people, the people who understand they need to do a succession plan, even the ones who understand how it works, many of them are saying, "How do we fund this?" Isn't that one of the impediments?
Oh, absolutely. And these are businesses that are growing. They're right at that same point where they're trying to figure, how do I provide retirement benefits to my employees? How do I provide health insurance? And then how do I fund for this ultimate succession? And there are a whole array of tools that can be used, some of which, if you buy them sooner rather than later, are less expensive.
Right.
But there are certainly tools that right up until the day you're ready to sell your company, like mm-hmm. an employee stock ownership, can be put in place.
Are some of them life insurance products? Now, those are good for buy-sell agreements. Those are good for key man insurance kind of, approaches, those kinds of things. But those are not necessarily orderly transactions, are they?
Well, they can be if they're well thought out, or they can be a mess if they're not. But, you know, as you think about buy-sell arrangements, clearly life insurance can be a key funding.
Right.
For a buy-sell agreement. And key man insurance can be critical, although a lot of times key person insurance is more about protecting the ongoing viability of the business
right.
than funding the actual sale. Right. Transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And even companies that go down the path of doing something like an ESOP usually aren't selling all of the company to
right.
the ESOP. In fact, the majority of ESOPs in the country are minority positions.
Oh, really? Oh, so
in
ESOP, the whole company ownership doesn't change hands all the time?
Oh, no, not at all. And even those that have moved to 100% ownership by an ESOP typically do that in multiple tranches.
Ah.
They don't do that all at
once. I didn't know that.
It's very
huh.
Yeah, it's very common for someone, let's say in their early 50s, to want to have a diversification.
Right. What is the minimum? What is the minimum number of employees, or what is the number, the sales volume, the profit, and number of employees? What is the rule of thumb minimum that you need to have to do an ESOP, employee stock option plan?
Yeah, I'll give you a rule of thumb. I'm always nervous because we already know rules of thumb are wrong. But
right.
At least they're directional.
Quickly, and then we'll
and
talk about it in the next segment.
Okay.
Give me a quick number.
Okay. 330,300, 3 million in value, 30 employees, 300,000 in net income after tax.
There you go. Okay, that's a good rule of thumb there, folks. I want to get Jerry to give us more of that. This ESOP thing is a good plan for a lot of baby boomer small businesses. 20 after Jared's.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.